are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Here, we're on air. Hold on. Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are right here on the treasure coast. We're heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we are also heard on the World Wide Web. My friend Ellen O'Neill and myself and Samantha and Paul and Danny Boy, our team has expanded.
Yes.
We've got really great people that helps us to put this show on, help us to produce, direct, sponsor the shows, our team of sponsorships. Everybody is so great too. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're on 12 years, going on our 13th year. It's hard to believe, Ellen, that we've made this studio part of our life.
And if you think about it, 52 weeks over 12 years, we've had two guests pretty much every single week. That's a lot of fantastic local, national, international folks that we've had on air. And today is no different. So you can listen to us live. If you'd like to, if you're just on the radio, it's 1510 WWBC, 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. You can also hear us on live 1510wwbc.com. You can just hit that listen live button. Or if you missed the show, you can hit us up on Sita Media Inc., which is our website, on our Facebook page, or on the 1510wwbc website.
Right. And Joanne Terry is here. Welcome to our show today, Joanne.
Thank you very much for having me, Sita.
And for our listeners who are tuning in, we just did a Facebook Live. Our studio has a lot of energy today. I think Joanne and I are just still excited and exhilarated from the Brevard Dems Gala that we had on Saturday. We're grateful and thankful to all the volunteers and the Brevard Dems Chair Pam Castellana for all the hard work. We had a great time, Joanne.
It was fantastic. It really, really was. I was really, really happy for the opportunity.
Yes, and you're a candidate, Ms. Joanne Terry, for U.S. House in here in Florida in our district, which is District 8.
Yes, that's correct.
And we're going to have you on the second segment talking about why you decided to run for office, your platform, where people can find you, events and things like that. But before we chat with you, I was prepping this morning for this very unscripted, informative, educational and informative show. And I was reading and learning more about our first caller, which is our first guest, actually, who's on the phone. She called and her name is Dr. Gwendolyn Martin. Very easy to say, Miss Ellen.
Yes.
Not an Indian name like mine that you have to butch it up sometimes. People call me all different things. Boogie,
yeah.
Begu. But anyways, Dr. Martin, who goes by the name Dr. Gwen, is a passionate, motivating, transformative leader and connects with people on a personal level. She has dedicated her career to working with children and adults during times of stress. She needs to go to Washington, D.C. and struggle. She knows the importance of prioritizing self-care. She is the founder and CEO of Dr. Gwen's Counselor Cafe. Her platform provides effective self-care solutions for helping professionals, including educators, school counselors, and licensed clinicians. I'm not going to read the rest of her bio because she's on the phone and she's energized and ready to go. So that's I'm going to say welcome to our show, Dr. Gwen. And who are you? Give us a little more background about yourself.
Good afternoon, everyone. So you had a great segue there. I am a recent educator turned entrepreneur, but education is in my DNA, so I will always be doing that in some capacity. You talked a little bit about Dr. Gwen's Counselor's Cafe, which is all things self-care, and I provide professional development for teachers, and I go in and support kids around mental health awareness, and I definitely want to give a shout out for May being Mental Health Awareness Month. So I'm very appreciative that you have me on at this time. And I do have a private practice, Coastal Crossroads Counseling Solutions, where I primarily work with teens and their families in my community here in Savannah, Georgia. So thank you so much for having me on today.
Oh, you are so welcome. And I was looking and listening to one of your short YouTube videos this morning where you spoke about self-care, and you are so correct. You know, I am a long-term care nurse, and I have seen where people became ill and end up in a twin bed having to spend $10,000 a month for health care, and they didn't enjoy life. They didn't get that white picket fence. They didn't go on a trip. They didn't go on to a different country, apply for a passport. And at the end of life, they say, oh my God, life went by too fast and I didn't do the things that I wanted to do. And your video speaks about vacation time and self-care. So how do you transition from being a school counselor, an educator, and now you are doing what most of us put on the back burner, put ourselves first?
Well, complacency definitely impedes progression. That's one of my sayings, and I think that sometimes we become complacent in where we are, and we don't do some of those things that, you know, we have to choose faith over fear to do. And so getting us out of our comfort zone at times, but you talked about like vacation days. This is one of my messages for educators is that, you know, we do have the summers off, but you don't have to wait all summer to take a day off. When you need time, take time, you know, to just do nothing or to do whatever it is that you need to do if your mental health is a concern. I mean, if you are overwhelmed and stressed, and it doesn't have to be, I think one of the misconceptions about self-care is it has to be taking a vacation. It doesn't. Self-care is about those things that we do routinely every day with fidelity to make sure that we are, you know, well mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, professionally. All of those things is what self-care is really about. So the misconception of it having to be a vacation, I think, is where people get tripped up into thinking, you know, that they don't take care of themselves or that they don't have the means to take care of themselves. A lot of the misconception is that self-care is around time and money, that you have to have time and money to take care of yourself, and you don't. You just have to have a consistent routine is what you have to have.
Well, you know, my friend Ellen Little is a musician here in town. She has her own band, and she's raising her hand. She wants to say something, but I've noticed that when she goes to play at Matt's Casbah or at the Crown Plaza Hotel or the Hilton, she's getting quite a few gigs. I find that a part of my self-care is just going there for 2 hours and listening to her play her music and get a drink. And that energizes me because I feel like I did something for myself.
Right.
Right.
And every gig that we have, one of the things that makes our band so popular is the fact that people make friends, and I make sure that people make friends in the crowd. So each time or each week, people come back and then they can look forward to those people coming. And it is like a little mini vacation. And I used to teach for Stephen Covey, which is kind of a cool thing. This was 20 years ago. He had this class called Achieving Your Highest Priorities. And it was basically a time management class. You got a calendar. You had to fill in things on the weeks, days, etc. But the very first thing we did was we filled in our vacation days. That was the first, before you touched anything on a calendar for the month, for the week, whatever it happened to be, it was when is the time for you? And I thought that was so progressive 20 years ago, but here we are again talking about the same thing of saying that, how important that is for everybody.
Right. And Dr. Gwen, I liked what you said, that a lot of people would wait and use a week at a time or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. But honestly, if you could take one day for the month, and go to the beach with your husband or go for lunch or meet a friend in a different county.
Go to the park. You don't even have to spend money. Just do something.
Right. So, you know, like what you're saying, it brings back a lot of memories because we had people back home in the island in Trinidad and Tobago that probably didn't have a huge home, what we like to say a compound, or didn't have a lot of money in the bank, didn't have fancy clothes, didn't have nice curtains or a nice car, but you know what they had? They had a small transistor radio. And these people will take that little radio with their precious battery and sit under a coconut tree on a brick and sit there and listen to calypsos or Hindi films. And they would
dance
and just have fun with nothing but a little tiny transistor radio. And when I read about you, I thought about that. And you know what? A lot of those people didn't have diabetes and hypertension and a lot of issues because
they didn't have the stress.
That's exactly right. So talk a little bit about stress. You said, like in one of the things you talk about in your videos is how to choose faith over fear to decrease our stress level.
Like I just talked about, you know, I'll use myself as an example. Like taking the leap from being, you know, an educator, not that I didn't love what I did, and I was very good at it, but I wanted to do more. So just taking that leap of faith to say, I want to be able to serve my community more. I want the freedom to do some of the things that I'm passionate about that I'm not able to do because, you know, of my job now. And it was very scary. And, you know, sometimes change is because you're leaving a place of comfort and stepping into what could be the very unknown and making your way. But I think it's a decision that I, you know, am so grateful that I made because I'm so much more accessible to people in my community and I'm able to make a greater impact, especially in this whole mental health crisis that we're in right now. So I'm not just working with the kids in my class or the kids in my school. I'm working with my community as a whole.
Yes, it really takes a village, right? And some of us have that talent, gift, and ability to give back, and we don't want to stay inside of a box. I know I was thinking about quitting my job once, and my good friend Ellen, who is my co-host, my right hand, is such a wonderful friend that God sent my way. She said, no, you need to have that steady stream of income coming in to do all the shenanigans that you do. So, you know, I found my way to give back into our community by still remaining a nurse, still having the radio show, and still doing public speaking and all that. But I also noticed that in order for us to reduce our stress level, we have to set personal and professional boundaries. And a lot of people don't know how to set those boundaries with their workers, their co-workers, and their families. So give us some hints on how to set boundaries.
A boundary, the first one, especially with work, begin and end work on time. You know, some of us eat, sleep, and breathe work. There's always, always, always something to be done, but you don't have to do it all in a day. And so when I tell people that, I'm like, I'm not saying that you can't ever come to work early or ever leave work late, but if you're doing that every single day, set some boundaries. Or in education especially, take a 30-minute lunch break to just breathe. Take some deep breaths. Eat a healthy lunch. A 30-minute lunch is not sitting at your desk checking emails. It's not fielding phone calls.
Are you talking to me?
It's not filing paperwork. Get up and get out of the office. You know, go, you know, to the park. Sit outside. Go talk to one of your coworkers who you never get a chance to talk to or get to know because all you do is talk about work.
Yeah. And you know what? You make some valid points because you're like, you know, when you talk about the teachers, I mean, God knows that we need to appreciate our teachers, show some respect for them. And yes, they do need that break because oftentimes they've got children coming to school who really have a lot of disciplinary issues. And the teachers are spending so much time not just teaching, but trying to discipline other people's children while in some areas they're trying to put cameras in the room. So the teachers today is not the teachers of yesterday.
No, but like you said, it's not just for educators. I know I talk a lot about educators because that's who I am and the people that I'm very connected to. But also, like you said, in your role, you know, it's for everyone. You know, not everyone takes the time to take a lunch break. Or having those boundaries, saying no. Ah, that's a huge boundary. Some people are voluntold to do everything, whether it's in their home, whether it's in their community, in their social, you know, network. you don't know how to say no, so you end up doing everything, and your plate is already full, and you're overwhelmed. But because you don't know how to say no, you end up being voluntold, is what I say, to do everything.
Oh, you and, better and spell that.
It's voluntold.
Spell
instead
that
of volunteered.
Me. You better spell that. You know, for my listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, you are going to learn a new word today from Dr. Gwen Martin, and it's the truth. I've never heard it said so beautifully before. Say it.
Voluntold.
Right.
You were voluntold.
Well, and the other side of that.
Think about it. And people in marketing, this is a perfect example. Someone's selling something and they say, you know, I have a $1, $3, or $5 one. Which one would you like? Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, well, I got to buy one. No, you don't.
Right.
You don't have to buy any. No, thank you. I won't take one of those today. I don't need a $1, $2, or $3, $5, whatever. I don't need whatever it is you're selling. I don't need it.
So two things about what you said. First of all, that taking the breaks, you know, and walking away, you'd be surprised how much more you can accomplish. People think, oh, I got to work straight through. I got to get all this done. But actually, if you do take that 15-minute break, if you do take that couple of minutes just to kind of break away, it's amazing how much more productive you are afterward.
When your brain breathes.
Right? Exactly.
Right.
And then the second part about the mental illness, just because it's Mental Illness Awareness Month, you know, something to be talked about for that voluntoldism. People have the feel to be needed, right? So they feel like if they're not needed, then their worth goes away,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but that goes into a little bit of like codependency and those
That's
kinds of things.
That's a mental health issue for sure.
Right. So, you know, check yourself. If you feel like you can't walk away, if you feel like you can't say no to things, there might be something else going on that you might need to talk to Dr. Gwen about or to another healthcare professional that might be in your corner. So, you know, while we're on these lines, you're on the campaign trail there, Joanne.
Yeah.
So what are you doing for self-care?
Well, I'll tell you, I definitely have a boundary problem. I've even put a pad and a paper and a pen next to my bed because sometimes I'll try to go to sleep at night and ideas just come in and I can't do anything until I write them down. But I think for the two things that really stand out to me is I really like to take long walks on the beach. In fact, I do some of my best speech writing walking on the beach. But if I really want to clear my head, I listen to Native American flute music. Nothing clears my head like just closing my eyes and
music.
Listening
to... It's therapy.
Yeah, there's just something
so
about
Dr. Gwen, how should Joanne or anyone who's tuning into our show today ask for help? Because a lot of people just don't know how to ask for help. Now, I don't have an issue with that. As I got older and bolder and wiser, I'm good at saying no. I'm good at saying I need help. And I've gotten to a point where this earth is my vacation spot. Like every day I wake up is a vacation, you know. But Joanne needs to know how to say no. She's running for office and they're coming at her from all sides.
Well, saying no, you know, for one thing, you know, people think that they're being mean or it's a confrontational kind of thing. One of the things to remember is that when you're saying no to others, you're saying yes to yourself. Like you have to, you know, value yourself enough to say no, and other people will value you too. They understand if you say, you can say it politely, I really would, you know, I really like the opportunity, I appreciate it, but right now my plate is just really full. Yeah, people understand that. Their plates are full too. And when you talked about the asking for help, you know, the first thing I want to say is it's a healthy, natural response to problematic situations. People hear me say that over and over because it's true. But when you ask for help, you need to be clear and concise about what it is you need specifically from the person and what it is that you're asking them to do. So I talk about it in regards to like the SMART acronym. You need to be specific about what it is that you need. You need to make sure that it's meaningful and measurable, that it's something that's realistic and attainable, and that you put a time bound on. Like, can you do this by Friday? Or, you know, specifically, what I need help with this. Because a lot of times people don't get the help that they need because they're not clear and concise about what the need is.
Right. So don't beat around the bush. Just say it like it is.
And help, ask the person who you know, think about who actually can help you. Because sometimes we're asking for help from people that are in the exact same situation that we're in.
That's right. So, Dr. Martin, in addition to having the Mental Health Cafe that you host, You also published an article in a respected journal. You wrote a chapter in a textbook. And you're working with so many children who are impacted by trauma. I'm sure, like, with a world just having been through COVID-19, you've seen a lot of people with mental health issues, not just the children, but the parents, the caregivers. Talk to us a little bit about your practice and how you dealt with that.
You know, here in the practice, like I said, I primarily do see children, but the whole reason I decided to go into private practice, especially now, because the need was so great, is so great, especially for children. It's an underserved population. For kids, it's very hard for kids to find providers, you know, in their area that provide mental health services, especially in person. With the onset of COVID, one of the great things that came out of it was telehealth, which is great. And you can get results from telehealth, but it's also really good when you can provide a space, especially for young children who needs the modeling and the hands-on and all of those kinds of things, and also supporting the parents in supporting the kids, because that whole COVID thing was massive. It is massive for everyone. It exacerbated a lot of problems that were already out there, especially in regards to mental health.
Yeah, and we've had people on our show from the domestic violence shelter. We've had people on from Housing for Homeless. Now we have people who talk about mental health. And all these things, sadly, people talk about politics, but life is politics, because when somebody don't have a place to live, they don't have health care, they don't have somebody at home to help them with homework, food. I mean, it affects their mental health. So how do we get our nation to become a kinder, gentler, more mindful nation? Because we're seeing where so many people in positions of power, mind you, they seem to focus on spreading hate and division and fear and all these things. They just get themselves into the head, the mental state of our nation and our people. So how do you and I and regular Americans go about our business and try to help those that actually need all this help?
Well, one of the things right now, I'd like to commend you on just having me on the show in the middle of Mental Health Awareness Month to just talk about, you know, the importance of mental health. That's one thing that we can do, is spread the word about mental health. And you were talking about, you know, some of the corporate kinds of things. Well, one of the great things that have also come out of the pandemic that I will say, and I definitely want to say this on your show. So there are a lot of companies out there now that are recognizing the need for mental health with their employees and really trying to make a stab at supporting them. So we have a lot of EAPs, employee assistance programs, that are now paying for counseling services for their, not only their employees, but for the dependents as well. So if you work for a company, whatever company, and you feel like you're in need of some mental health services, check with your human resources department, because so many companies out there now are really trying to step up and help with the mental health crises, and they are paying, like I said, not just for the dependent, but I meant for the employee, but for all of the dependents to get counseling services. And it used to be 4 or 5 or 6 sessions, but now they're paying anywhere from, you know, 12 to 25, 40 sessions, which is huge. So the employee is not paying anything, and that's wonderful. I think just getting the word out there about some of the resources that are available for mental health services is one of the things that we can do.
And why do you think, like, in our nation, I don't think we put enough stock on mental health? We talk about financial health, we talk about physical, we talk about spiritual, but yes, even emotional. But we're watching where COVID-19 really took a toll on the elderly, the caregivers, the children, the teachers, and yet still, we have people who are running for office, and I'm so glad that Joanne is running for office, and this is one of the things that she touches on, is that in order for our nation to heal, mental health should be part of healthcare. And what you're doing too, because you can't send a kid to school if he's angry and upset with his parents, and the parents upset because they can't pay their mortgage, they can't pay their car payment, they can't make the car insurance. We are watching here in Florida where the homeowner's insurance has gone through the roof, and parents have to figure out, am I going to buy food for my children or buy medicine or pay for the insurance? So, I mean, when you go around the country and write and speak, are you talking to people in the terms that it is a holistic approach to mental health as well?
Absolutely. And I think one of the important things, you know, mentioned this or touched on it a little bit, putting counselors back in schools. I mean, we don't, like you said, if the child is going to school angry or upset or, you know, hungry or whatever, you know, in the last several years, a lot of our counseling in schools have been cut, you know, and I don't think we've ever met the, you know, American School Counselors Association quota for what the ratio should be. You know, you're in a lot of cases having one counselor in a school with, you know, let's say 750 kids, or they're split between schools. You're literally running around putting out fires all day. You're not being proactive or preventative or any of those things that can really meet the needs of the kids. So that's definitely something that I think politicians should look at.
Yeah. You know, I would love to see you in Washington, D.C., you know, addressing the United States Congress about this, because, you know, we saw where other nations, their prime ministers and presidents are able to address the Congress. But we need people, real people in real time, to speak, and I hope and pray you can come back on a show again. But Dr. Gwen Martin, can you give us your website and the information for people to find you if they need a public speaker, if they want to buy one of your books, or if they want to listen into Dr. Gwen's Counselor Cafe? Just give us all the information, because you are fantastic. You're fabulous.
Thank you so very much for having me. You can reach me at Dr. Gwen at Dr. Gwen's Counselor's Cafe. Dr. Gwen's Counselor's Cafe Facebook page, Dr. Gwen's Counselor's Cafe Instagram. That's my email handle, Dr. Gwen, like I said, at Dr. Gwen's Counselor's Cafe. On YouTube, you can watch some self-care videos that Ms. Sita talked about just at the beginning of the show. Several videos out there around self-care, asking for help, saying no, making yourself a priority. And if you're looking for counseling services and you're here in the Savannah area, Dr. Gwen at Coastal Crossroads Counseling Solutions is the name of my private practice, and I see patients in person and also telehealth for those that are in Georgia but not in the area.
Yeah, and you know, I saw something on Facebook today, and I thought about you when I read it, and I said to myself, you know, I'll say this on it. It says that the quote was, you don't have to hold a position to be a leader. And I think in our world today, it's good that we have people like you who are in leadership roles, who can empower others who don't have the educational background to go home and be a leader in their home. Because we're watching what's happening in our nation with young girls and women, and we've got to start having those talks seriously with our young men and a young woman about their reproductive health, about what's going on in our country. Because one of the things about mental care, too, is when we bring children into the planet and we're not ready.
Yes, and that's why I'm so passionate about working with kids, because my hope is that in working with them when they're really young, we don't have to deal with the mental health issues that they may have as adults. If we can catch them while they're really young and offset some of that, then, you know, we don't have a nation and be in the midst of a mental health crisis like we are in right now.
Right. So what you're saying is education and opportunities.
As
usual, we all talk about that. Well, Ellen, this has been a great segment, and Dr. Gwen is just awesome.
I can't wait to tune into all of Dr. Gwen's stuff. Now, I'm so glad that you introduced us. We are going to tune out real quick and listen to our sponsors here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you, Dr. Gwen, for being with us today here on air and sharing the airwaves with us. Folks, just hang on just another few minutes, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and with Joanne Terry.
Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. Just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MEDFAST. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're on AM 1510, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we are heard online everywhere. What a robust first segment.
It was. So if you're looking to tune in, you can tune in to 1510 WWBC right there on your radio dial. Or if you'd like to do that online, you can also hit 1510WWBC.com. You can hit the listen live button, or our shows are all archived there. But this particular part of the segment, I'm so excited to talk to Joanne Terry. She's running for Congress. And this part of the segment is being paid by her campaign, by Joanne Right. Terry, to elect Joanne Terry for Congress.
And we just have to tell our friends and our listeners, we do give equal opportunities. Anyone who wants to come on, they just have to, if they're running for office, they have to pay for their airtime.
Yeah.
So, Joanne Terry, you make my heart smile, because in today's climate, the way politics are, people are afraid to run for office, especially here in Brevard. We all watch what's happening with the girl, one of our school board members, when people were camping outside of her home and all that. And I ran for office myself in 2018 for state representative. And it takes a toll on your body, mind, spirit, and your family. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. You are a lifelong Democrat, and you're running for U.S. House Florida District 8 to replace Bill Posey. You are an engineer, and you decided to challenge yourself to run for office. So tell us a little bit about that decision that you made.
Yes, well, thank you again, Sita. I want to say thank you very much for having me on the show today. And I also really enjoyed the first segment with Dr. Gwen. And I think it's really important to note that how toxic our politics and the anger and the hatred that's shown out there is really also contributing to this mental illness crisis. And the fact that it's infiltrating our schools is just really, really sad. So yes, I did decide to run for office this year. I actually worked with Jim Kennedy on his campaign in 2020, and I was feeling really good about his campaign, you know, especially with Trump running again. And I felt like we had a lot of people were peeling off of the Trump wagon, and I thought we had a really good chance. And it turned out that we had the same result that we always had.
Yeah.
And so that really disheartened me. So I went to work for the League of Women Voters. I actually volunteered with them for the last couple of years to get a better idea of what our local issues are and what our what the temperature of the community is. And then I hadn't planned to run for office, but I watched the 20th anniversary commemoration speeches of 9/11. And I watched George Bush stand up there and talk about how the domestic terrorists from January 6th were the same as the Al-Qaeda terrorists that attacked us on 9/11. And I watched Colin Powell actually talk about how they had intelligence, but they had a failure of imagination that something that bad could happen. And the whole day was around how our country is coming apart with the division and how afraid Republicans and Democrats are about where we're going. And I walked out to the living room and I looked at my husband. And I said, Marion, I think I have to run. And he said, yeah, I think you do too.
Yeah. And I'm proud of you because we all watched what happened on January 6th. I remember I was holding my little grandson and I was like, is that the United States?
Yeah.
I was like, I thought it was a movie at some point. And then I'm like, no, it's people picking up the stuff inside of the Congress and walking around with it and picking
bashing
up computers.
Yeah.
That belong to the senators and U.S. representatives. And I was like, well, this is so wrong. Like, I went to Washington, D.C. for the Women's March, and we had hundreds of thousands of people. No one breached those concrete barriers.
Yes.
You know, so I myself was disheartened about that. But you are a hardworking, dedicated professional in your field. You're an upstanding member of a community, and you feel like this is your time to give back. What are some of the issues that you feel you would be better at legislating?
Well, one of the things that I really want to do is reunite our community. And I think that we can do that around a lot of our shared values and our shared local issues. We all see what's happening with the Indian River Lagoon, and we need more help down here. And I just feel like that has been neglected the last several years, especially as we've been arguing with each other, you know, in these partisan wars. We don't get the money down here. The only time our governor comes down here to give us money is when his poll numbers drop or an election
for
is coming
up.
For a photo op, which is another reason why we absolutely have to protect our right to vote. But the other thing is that look at our explosive economic growth. If we don't ensure that our explosive economic growth doesn't outpace our residents, that it's not inclusive and equitable, then we're going to be increasing the poverty here. We're going to be increasing the crime here. We have an opportunity still to get ahead of these like big city problems that a lot of Republicans are really afraid of when they see the big city problems on TV. We're creating them here, and it's not the Democrats that are creating them. It's the GOP that is prioritizing corporate profits and corporate convenience over what the people need. We have to restore that balance.
So where do you feel the disconnect is that so much disinformation is getting out into the public? Some people call it misinformation, some people call it disinformation, but it's almost as though the news media certain TV channels, certain cable channels, get a hold of a small clip and they magnify it.
Sure. And we're not talking.
And it's wrong. And it's wrong.
Right. And we're not talking to each other about it anymore. We're so quick to believe what we see in the media about what's being said about each other that we don't talk to each other again to find out whether or not that's right. You know, it's like we need to be talking to each other and talking at the source. So I went, we can't be afraid to go into GOP and Republican areas, especially the moderate and the traditional Republicans who don't like where their party is going. And we have to go in there and say, well, look, let's talk about what the Democrats here in this red district, what red district Democrats stand for and what we believe and how we want to work together to make our community a better place, not what you're seeing on TV.
Right. Don't listen to the political pundits who are getting paid to pay. They're using the money that they're getting paid on these cable shows to pay their own lights, water, telephone, send their kids to school and healthcare by lying to other people to make a living. But here's the thing. There are single issue voters out there.
Yes.
And Brevard is filled with them.
Yes.
They believe in life at conception. Some of them do want to see the overturning of Roe versus Wade. And legislatively, we're watching where that's going.
Sure.
How do you speak to those people and say to them that, listen, we are not running for office so that people could promote abortions or termination of a pregnancy? We are saying to promote comprehensive sex education at appropriate ages, as well as academic, trade, and a business. How do you reach those people to let them see that the Democrats are not what's painted on the cable news?
Well, first of all,
that's a big one for you to overcome. Yes. Here in Brevard.
Well, first of all, I would say that we are not arguing whether or not abortion is right or wrong. It's a personal decision, right?
It's a choice.
We are arguing what the government's role in that decision should be for a woman. That is the only thing that we are talking about. And there are a lot of traditional Republicans, traditional conservatives, and Democrats who do not believe in abortion personally, for whether it be personal reasons or religious reasons, but they do not believe the government should be the one to make that decision for a woman. And that's really what we're talking about. And the second point I would make is that if we took all of the energy, time, money, and resources and people that we put into arguing about what the government's role should be, and we take all of that and we put it into education, prevention, adoption, alternatives, I bet we could make a lot more progress on the underlying goal of reducing abortions than talking about continuing to argue about whether or not the government should be involved.
Oh.
Most people agree the government should not be inside our homes and should not be inside our bodies.
Right. Or just encourage every aunt, cousin, mom, dad, older sister to sit down with the younger ones at home like my mother did with a third grade education and teach you about the birds and the bees.
Sure.
If you decide to have sexual intercourse with someone, you can have a child. So how do you prevent it? I mean, my parents used to put the fear of God into us by saying, who is going to mind that child? Well, who is going to feed it, clothe it, educate it, and watch it?
And I'll tell you something that my mom did, which I think is brilliant, and I think we need more, especially in the schools, is my mom gave me a vision of what I could be if I get all the way through school and all the way through college. My mom was a secretary at Lockheed. My father died when I was 10, and she stressed the importance of education. And she focused me to take science and math. I was always strong in math. And when I wanted to take shorthand, she said, no, go take physics. And so, and she's like, you know, she would have me sit down and watch, I remember Charlie's Angels, right? And Policewoman. And those were the shows that would be like, that the women that I want to go to college, I want to drive that Pinto was always my car. And I want to be that economically independent adult, right? I want to live on my own. I want this. So I always had that vision of what I could be and what I wanted to be that drove my decisions, because I grew up in a not so good area of North Hollywood, California. In fact, North Hollywood, California was the porn capital of the world when I was a teenager. We couldn't walk outside our apartment building at night unless there was a police car at the Bob's Big Boy down the street, which was a coffee shop chain in those days. But what always drove my decisions was that vision of what I can be. And I don't think we give that vision well enough to our young people today.
Yeah, and that's where when you're running for office, that comes in handy because you could use that experience to tell the people you're speaking to how to talk to the people in their lives. So
right.
We're watching a lot of politicians use hate, and we're watching the rise of the extremists who I'm not sure what their agenda is. I mean, I'm dark. I'm a naturalized citizen who loves this country. That's why I have my flag. And I know a lot of people are afraid. They feel like, do you have to go to God and say, hey, why did you make people brown and black and Hindu and Muslim and Christian and different varieties in order to be accepted? So why are politicians playing into this extremism and hate?
Because it's working. I mean, because it's working. Because that's where they think they can get their votes and their division. When you have no platform, when you have no positive vision of the future to offer, and you have no platform, you have to play to the only thing that you can get, which is hate and fear. And those are very, very, very powerful emotions. You know, I saw a bumper sticker once, and I can't remember exactly what it said, but it was awesome. It said, well, God made different colored flowers. Of course he made different colored people. You know, it's all, you know, very interesting, and we're all very diverse. And it's easy to prey on things that you're not used to, right? And in a district like ours, when I moved here in 2004 from the Los Angeles area, one of the first things I noticed was how segregated we were here. And I had no idea.
Yeah, there's a division within the division,
too. I had no idea places like this really existed.
Right, there's a division, you know? And within the division.
And then I go up to my husband's small town in South Carolina, and it's way worse than here. And I was like, wow. And a lot of it is because people haven't had that personal experience with people who
other
look,
cultures, other religions,
who,
other classes.
Other religions, yeah. Other classes. And right now we are growing really, really fast. And as we grow, we're becoming much more diverse. And instead of having our political leaders helping us manage that diversity into a thriving economic community, they are trying to use that as a way to keep
it's a
their
wedge.
Base.
It's
their
a wedge
base.
Issue.
Yeah.
So you're running against our sitting Congressman Bill Posey, and in one of your talking points, you said that you think that he's one of the people in Brevard who has a role in the extremism and hate. I mean, you've seen videos and heard speeches
Absolutely.
And things like
well,
that.
Well, first of all, he did vote against certifying the 2020 election results. He was the congressman that took to the floor of the United States House of Representatives with his Let's Go Brandon speech. I mean, that's disrespectful to the office of the president, right? And when you look at his voting record and you even look at his websites right now, he is definitely only representing that far right extreme element of the GOP.
He has the Let's Go Brandon on his website?
No. He had this speech.
Oh, yeah. On, really?
Yeah. He actually said that on the House floor.
Oh, I
and
didn't
so,
know that.
But he's a smart man. And he has won the last 7 elections here. So he's doing this because he thinks that's the majority of our district. I'm running because I think it's not. I think that he's representing now the 20% of that far right, and he's betting that the whole 80% in between think Democrats are too extreme and Republicans are too extreme, so you got to pick an extreme, so pick the extreme you always know.
Well, there's people in the middle.
And there's a lot of people
yes,
in the middle.
Yes.
And that's like the 80%, well, I don't know what it is. I'm hoping it's 80% of the people in the middle. It says, you know what? Let's stop the madness. Let's stop all of this. Let's come back together. Let's focus on the things that we know we all want to work on. And let's start talking to each other and going from there. We can solve our hard problems. We all agree on what the problems are. But we can come together and come up with the right solutions if we just start talking to each other again instead of yelling at each other again.
Spoken like a through systems engineer. That's it. Solve problems. So we all watched in horror as the election results were questioned. Mm-hmm. We've never had that in our country before. This America is the greatest place for almost everything. We've seen elections in India where they have to take weeks to take the box to where it's been counted.
Sure.
We've watched elections in other countries where people still use ink. And yet still we watch in this country the last election where trust in elections was gone in some areas and people were just lying. And now those same people who were lying about the electorate and the election results, they're running for office and they're winning in their primaries. How do you propose to restore trust in elections. Now, we do have a great supervisor of election. Lori Scott is the best.
Yes.
And I have faith in Bravad. But
absolutely,
that is something that I think you are also advocating to restore faith,
yes,
in politics.
Definitely. In fact, the point that I will make is that in this country, we have laws to protect our money from people who lie to us, from con artists, right? You can't go and get swindled out of your money. You can report them and they can be prosecuted for fraud, right? But when people are lied to steal their votes, that's protected by free speech. And in this country right now, it feels like we are valuing our money more than we are valuing our vote. And I think that is backwards.
Yeah.
We have got to find a way to break through that. I am not in any way advocating for restricting free speech in any way at all. But we need to have a grassroots movement that addresses why people are believing the things that they are so that we can make lying not work. If voters don't buy into it and the voters say we're not going to vote for the lies, then the lies won't be there because it won't work. We, the voters, have the power to say no. And it's time that we all step up and say no. We don't want to be lied to anymore. We don't want people to mischaracterize our political opponents anymore. We want to figure out how to work together. We want to get the government working again.
Right. Well, the government is working in Florida because our governor just had a task force for election security and fraud playing into what happened in other states. How do we, when you're on the campaign trail, how do you combat something like that? Because by giving legs to that and legitimizing it, legitimately saying that we need a force for elections, you're kind of saying, well, Florida has problems.
Well, that is certainly the impression they want to get, right? We're into guilty by accusation instead,
yeah,
of, you know, what happened to innocent until proven guilty? What happened to having to have proof, right? Now it's just a matter of you can set up a law to give the impression that something is wrong.
And it's working.
Very effective. And that's why we have to figure out how to make information more accessible, good information more accessible, more easily accessible to the voters, because the voters have the power to vote it out and say, no, we're not going to put up with these shenanigans anymore. And if we're going to maintain our freedoms and our liberties, the voters have to step up and say no.
So for listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Joanne Terry. She is a lifelong Democrat, and she's running for U.S. Florida House District 8 right here in Brevard County, Florida, and parts of Orange County as well, right?
Yes, that's
right. And parts of Indian River County.
All of Indian River County, all of Brevard
County. You have a lot of ground to cover, my friend. So we're all watching what's happening with the rent in Brevard, in Orlando, with the insurance rates, and there's a lot of issues going on with the housing market. Once elected, what can be done at the federal level to ensure that people have a safe place to live?
Sure. Well, I mean, it's very hard in a state like ours because we do not have state taxes, right? So we can't have a lot of state tax incentives. We do have local taxes, but our community needs all of the corporate and local taxes that we earn or that we get from property owners. So what we really need at the federal level is we need to look more at federal funding. We pay federal taxes here too, and we need to get more of the benefit of that. So we can be offering more federal tax incentives to landlords and property owners who do rent to try to offset the cost. We want everybody to be whole, right? We need the landlords to be whole, and we need the tenants to be whole. And we need more programs to get people off the streets. You know, in Utah and in Washington State, they've done some tremendous work with homeless communities and trying to transition them back into being functioning adults. And we can mimic that kind of stuff here with grants, with federal grants. We can put together a task force using the role of the office to put together a local task force to really figure out how to address it from all of these different angles, and then putting real funding and real legislation behind it.
So bring the grassroots leadership and Washington together.
That's right.
Brilliant.
We can't be separated anymore. We can't be like, well, I'm not going to talk to them because they're Republicans, and we're not going to talk to them because they're Democrats. This is an everybody problem.
That's right. And so we're watching what's going on with the books here in Brevard County, Florida, banning of books. You can't say words. I mean, I grew up reading books, and I didn't have any issues with Huckleberry Finn or you know, To Kill a Mockingbird or any books from England. We read the books, and if you went home and you asked your parents a question about the book you read, they set you straight based on their value system at home or cultural beliefs, and we moved on. We did penmanship, math, English, and we moved on.
Sure.
What do you see happening? What's the future of public education here in Brevard and in our state?
Well, I definitely think that we can't restrict the kids' freedom to have a full and unbiased education. We need a population that is exposed to a lot of different ideas, a lot of diversity. We need to have them ask those questions. And as parents can't shy away from having those hard discussions with their children. If we shelter our kids and don't expose them, then they're not going to know how to deal with it as they grow up, because ultimately as adults, they will get exposed.
They will face people
They
like
will
that.
Face
yes.
people.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're not doing our kids any favors.
So we have 2 minutes left, and I'm going to do this in 30 seconds each one. So, of course, we're looking at affordable housing. We talked about that, public housing. How about people want to see some action and legislation on 30 seconds on prison reform? Do you have an agenda for that?
I think for prison reform specifically, I don't have a specific platform or agenda other than to put together the right task force with people from both sides of the aisle. Because if we only do it from one side of the aisle, then we're going to get partisan solutions. We need solutions that both sides of the aisle can buy into, and that means they both have to be part of the solution.
How about immigration reform? We're still watching the people, the politicians kicking that can down the road.
Oh, the immigration reform just really kind of annoys me, because I actually think that today's GOP don't want to solve the problem, because they want to keep using it as a political issue because it's so effective for them. But I think that requires a three-pronged solution. Number one, we need to be dealing with it at the source. We need to do what the administration is doing by trying to improve the conditions in the home countries. The refugee crisis in the world, it's not just us, it's the entire world, and it's a tragedy. But we have to be able to protect our borders, and one of the ways we can do that is to make immigration less attractive by helping the communities at home. We need to get profit out of the border facilities, and we need
$775 a day for some of those places
kid. So when you talk about who's being motivated by the money for illegal immigrants, that's who's being motivated by the money, or the facilities that are getting paid by the head. And then we need to make it easier to move workers into this country because we have a worker shortage. And if we're going to continue to grow economically, we need to deal with that too. And legal immigration has always been one of the ways that we grow.
Right. And of course, you have speaking engagements. You have a website. Give us the website so people can volunteer, give money, time.
Yes, absolutely. My website is joanneterry.com. And you can find all of my social media links there. And you can find my YouTube channel. And I actually have my whole talk from the Big Blue Bash is up on my YouTube channel.
Okay, and I'm going to give you 30 seconds to pretend you're in an elevator and you just met Ellen. And Ellen needs to know why to vote for Joanne Terry for Florida District 8.
Absolutely. Well, my name is Joanne Terry, and I'm running for Florida District 8 because I think we could. I think people are exhausted by our politics. They're exhausted by the anger. They want us to come together again. They want us to make progress on our issues. I think by focusing on our local issues that we can all agree we need to address, we can learn how to talk to each other again, and that will give us the tools that we need to tackle the more difficult issues.
Ellen, what do you say to that?
Brilliant. That's exactly, but that's what we want. That's what we need to happen, and we needed to have it happen here locally for
that's
sure.
Right. Even Marjorie Taylor Greene did a survey amongst her people, and 70% of them said they didn't want a national divorce. We have to work together.
Well, you know what it is, right?
National divorce, that's
we
fantastic.
All learn from each other. We learn from education, history, life experiences. We learn by talking to each other, going into our community, no matter what political party you're registered with, and saying at the end of the day, we all want food, water, shelter, a place to call home, and education. And yes, pay your taxes if you can and support the social programs that helps all of us.
That's right.
But I think your messaging is good. We're in this together. It takes a village. Stop the hate. Stop